Welcome to the Oregon Coast Birdcast, a podcast about the birds of the Oregon Coast. I'm your host, Paul Lask, and I'm recording from the North Branch of the Oregon Coast Community College here in Lincoln City. All right, the spring migration is in full swing here on the Central Coast. Shorebirds are streaming in by the thousands. Mixed flocks of smaller birds could include western sandpipers, least sandpipers, dunlin, and semi-palmated plover. We might see medium-sized birds like redknots and dowitchers. Other shorebirds to look for on the beaches or bay mudflats include black-bellied plovers, ruddy turnstones, long-billed curlews, and, of course, the mini whimbrel. Other birds to look for include warblers and flycatchers. I recently heard my first olive-sided flycatcher of the season in my neighborhood, and that was nice. We've had reports of western flycatchers, Wilson's warblers, yellow warblers, black-throated gray warblers, and many orange-crowned warblers. Up in Tillamook County, you can look and listen for these warblers at Cape Mears, along the trails near the lighthouse, and especially along the closed road between the turnoff to the entrance of the lighthouse and Bay Ocean Road. This is a paved road that is easy to walk. Further up Tillamook County, on Tall Dyke Path just north of Nehalem, is another good place to listen and look for warblers. And if you're lucky, you might also hear or see red-breasted nuthatches or even a Sora or Virginia rail. Keep an eye on those feeders. Band-tailed pigeons may be visiting them again soon. With their bright yellow feet, they're easy to distinguish from Eurasian collared doves. And they might be found at the Whiskey Creek Fish Hatchery along Neatarts Bay. A great way to look and listen for birds is to participate in a monthly local bird walk. And information on that can be found at Lincoln City Audubon at lincolncityaudubon.org. My guest today is Ruth Shelley. Ruth is the vice president of the Audubon Society's Lincoln City chapter, and Ruth is starting an exciting citizen science project called the Osprey Awareness Initiative. Ruth, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Paul. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so I thought maybe we could start by talking a little bit about how we got into ospreys.
Well, Lincoln City is relatively small, fewer than 10,000 people, but we probably have more ospreys per capita than any other Oregon city. We have more than a dozen nesting sites, and osprey, these migratory birds, come back to visit us every summer. They arrive mid-March and they leave mid-October, and we're always happy to see them.
Yeah, yeah. Is it true that a lot of their diet is herring-based? Do you know?
Well, a lot of their diet is almost exclusively fish.
Okay.
99% of what osprey eat is fish. And that's why Lincoln City is such an attractive place to spend the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
They come up looking like any tourist for a lodging and for good food.
Yeah.
And here, because they eat almost exclusively fish, we have the ocean, we have Devil's Lake, we have two major rivers, we have a large estuary, and that means abundant sources of many different types of fish.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. How did you, in particular, get into ospreys? What drew you to this bird?
What drew me to osprey is what drew me to Audubon, just being aware of different species. And because osprey nest very close to our house, my husband and I were watching this tall pole with a nest on top, not knowing who lived there.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the osprey showed up, and we tracked them over the course of the summer, and they had chicks. And it was such a wonderful sequence to watch that as I got to know the bird better through our work in Audubon, it was like, this is something that we should share with others.
Yeah, yeah. They're, I've heard them described as the gateway bird for environmental educators. They're dramatic. And
they are large, charismatic, and extremely dramatic in their behavior.
Totally.
If you can imagine an osprey diving straight down, head first, 70 feet in the air, and then at the last minute reversing to plunge its feet into the water, grab a fish underwater, bring it up from the lake or from the ocean, shake themselves like a dog, and carry it off. There's nothing more thrilling to watch.
Yeah, I used to be a kayak guide on the Willamette River in Portland. And that's when I first heard of ospreys. As some, like my coworker was like, oh, there's an osprey platform over here and they have a camera on it. And I would tell clients that, you know, on the water. And it was always interesting to see different client perspectives. Some were like, oh, that's interesting. Others were like, where, and how can I log in and watch this? And I started to learn a little bit more about them too. And we also have a pole with a platform on it with a view from our apartment. And it's interesting because some years they don't return to that nest.
That is true. Typically, osprey will return to the same nest year after year, but sometimes they change their mind. Often it's due to some sort of nearby disturbance. For example, our nest, the one my husband and I observe, was abandoned after the fires of 2020, and there was a lot of log clearing in the immediate neighborhood, and they just didn't like the disturbance and went off to a different platform. But I think that the other reason osprey are such a wonderful gateway bird is that they are found everywhere on every continent instead of except Antarctica, as well as throughout the entire state of Oregon, except for the very southeast corner of the state. And the reason they're not there is that there's no water and there are no trees. And those are the two important things that osprey need.
Yeah, they're also indicators of waterway health.
Absolutely, absolutely. You may have heard of the term biomagnification.
Right.
And, of course, little fish are food for medium-sized fish or food for bigger fish, which are food for osprey.
Yeah.
And if there are any toxins in the water, the little fish, then the medium-sized, the large, and the osprey concentrate that toxin on the way up the food chain. And so if an osprey is eating fish that have toxins in it, it would indicate that that food is not healthy and thus the environment is not healthy.
Right, which was a problem in the 70s, right, with DDT, the after effects of DDT.
Absolutely. DDT was used as a pesticide for many years through the 50s and 60s, and then in the 70s, it was determined that the concentration of DDT, and it breaks down into the chemical DDE, in birds of prey like osprey, bald eagles, that chemical was thinning the eggshells of these predatory birds. And as a consequence, when the mother bird would incubate the eggshells, they would crush. In 1972, DDT was banned. And both osprey and bald eagles and other raptors, as we call them, bounced back because their eggshells slowly got thicker and they were able to raise bigger and more successful clutches.
Ospreys are a success story on a few levels because you have that, but then you also have this cohabitation where they are now able to kind of live in our space or us in their space or however you want to frame it. And I think that's exciting too.
I think that osprey are one of the most successful urban birds.
Yes.
Peregrine falcons are another example. But osprey have a wingspan of 5 to 6 feet. I mean, they are absolutely magnificent large birds.
Yeah.
And they need to swoop into their nest with their wings extended. That means that they can't have any obstruction as they're headed to their nest. And they seek open areas, ideally dead tree snags.
Yeah.
So a dead tree with a dead top, and that's where they build their nest for an unobstructed landing path.
Yeah.
Dead tree snags are becoming less prevalent due to logging and urban development and dead tree removal. And so osprey have chosen instead telephone poles and light poles and cell towers. And sometimes the osprey nesting can interfere with that original tall post's function. And so humans have either built a nesting platform on top of that equipment to protect their equipment and protect the osprey, or they have removed the osprey nest and then built a dedicated nest platform nearby so that the osprey goes to a dedicated platform. That means that osprey and humans can live very well together, but the added benefit is that osprey nests are incredibly easy to observe because they're not deep in the forest. They're just wide out in the open. Yeah. And here in Lincoln City, we can go to the high school soccer field. We can go to the fire station. We can go to the local excavating company. And the osprey are out there for everybody to see.
So I was wondering about that. Was there a cooperative effort to build these platforms, or did it just sort of happen coincidentally over time?
To my knowledge, it has happened episodically over time. Because the birds are beloved. They are a welcome summer visitor to the area. And I think it's to Lincoln City's credit that they have sought this cohabitation instead of trying to push the osprey out.
Yeah, I was wondering if there are rules against building platforms, or if there's, if you wanted to build one, can you?
To my knowledge, you can. Okay. I mean, on your own private property, you could. Certainly, if the land doesn't belong to you, you'd need to check with the owner. It's not an easy feat because you have to have equipment to get up that high, and hence the utility and cell phone operators that manage those poles, it's in their best interest, and they have the equipment to install the platform to protect their infrastructure and support the birds at the same time.
Couple osprey fun facts I wanted to run by you, and you can confirm or deny or play neutral, but the mother leaves the nest first at the end of the season, I read.
That is true. The mother leaves first. The male is the first to arrive and the last to leave.
Okay.
And the male comes scouting out the nest site, which is typically the one that he has used before.
Yeah.
But when the female comes, it's like they renew their courtship all over again.
Right.
And initially, the female will be on the nest, and the male will bring sticks to show that he's a good nest builder, and then he'll bring fish to show that he's a good provider.
Yeah.
And after she has essentially checked him out and said, okay, we can do this another year, they go ahead and start building a nest.
Because they don't winter together. Is that true also?
That is correct.
Okay.
They might go to the same region, but they don't stay together the entire year.
And another thing I wanted to run by you, the chicks, are they taught how to hunt, or is it kind of they have to figure it out on their own? Do you know?
Well, it is instinctual,
but
they model the behavior of their parents.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's exciting. And then the last thing was, I think once they migrate, they don't reform as a family, right? Like the chicks don't come back to the parents in Mexico or wherever they go.
That is correct. The chicks will typically stay a couple of years in the wintering grounds down south before they come north again.
Interesting.
And so they don't necessarily stay with their parents because they need to develop and grow up and establish their own patterns, and they won't breed until they're about 5 years old.
Okay. It's interesting. Thanks. I, you know, scour the internet and I want to fact check with somebody who knows.
I can't say I'm an expert, but that's one of the benefits of this Osprey Awareness Initiative is that we are really promoting public education about osprey so that Lincoln City residents and tourists begin to appreciate this fascinating bird.
Yeah, let's get into it. So it's a citizen science project initiative. Maybe we could talk about what that is. What is citizen science for those who don't know, and how did you guys come across this?
Well, we have three pillars of the Audubon Society of Lincoln City. We work with education, conservation, and what we call community science. And the education part is pretty obvious with the Osprey Awareness Initiative. We want people to get to know osprey, learn the fascinating facts about them. The conservation aspect we touched upon because osprey are indicators of healthy habitat. But the community science is using everyday people like you and me to collect data in a systematic way that can be used year after year after year. So when you think of 12 to 14 nests scattered around Lincoln City, it would be impossible for one person to keep tabs on all of them from mid-March to mid-October. And to be able to observe them, say, 3 to 4 times a week to see what the osprey are doing. And so Audubon Society of Lincoln City got a grant from National Audubon Society to train an osprey watch team of people who have essentially adopted nests and volunteered to say, I will watch this nest. And we have each been trained on what behaviors to look for, how to tell an adult from a chick, how to tell when they're feeding, how to tell when the chicks are fledging, that kind of thing. Yeah. And then very important, we all have data sheets where we record what day we've been there, what hour, what behaviors we've observed, how many birds we've seen, and those data sets are put into a master data set that is apples to apples for every nest, gathered very systematically and gathered year to year to year. Yeah. So for years, people have been watching osprey in Lincoln City, but those observations have never been formally recorded. And now that they are, researchers can go back to that data set and say, the osprey are showing up later, or they're showing up earlier, or we're not seeing as many chicks, or we've seen more chicks. And that really helps identify trends over time.
Yeah. Yeah. So part of this is print, but part of it's digital as well, right?
Well, part of it's print in terms of us sitting with a clipboard and printing it, right, as we're observing the osprey. But we are keeping a digital data set that can be added to over time, and we are keeping digital photographs of every nest so that we can also start to identify pictorially what's happening on the nest, and those photographs will be shared through our osprey map that we're developing for our website, so you can click on any nest, see what the activity is, and see photographs from that nest.
Whoa, that's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. It's like harnessing energy that's already happening around town.
Absolutely. Right. All of us are just love the osprey. Right. We would be watching these nests regardless.
Right.
In this way, our hobby turns into something that adds to scientific knowledge over time.
Part of the challenge for osprey around pollutants we talked about, but also fishing line.
Physical. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are physical deterrents to osprey nesting.
Yeah.
One we already talked about, and that is the lack of dead tree snags.
Okay.
But then secondly, osprey build a nest year over year. It gets bigger and bigger. But as they prepare for the female to lay their eggs, they put moss and lichen and other soft materials in the base of the nest.
Yeah.
And as they are gathering materials, they can pick up baling wire or fishing line, or they've even found hula hoops braided into osprey nests, because osprey will pick up anything they think is looks appropriate, or there will be baling wire or fishing twine entangled in the branches that they pick up from coastal environments.
Sure.
The danger of this is that the chicks then get tangled in the wire or the line, and that means that they can't get out of the nest. And it's estimated that 10% of all chick death is due to foreign materials being in the nest.
Yeah, I free dive in the jetty, and can tell you there's a lot of rope and stuff underwater too. So I just picture that when I'm, you know.
When they catch a fish, they'll bring up the line with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So part of this project would be to draw awareness to these issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the conservation aspect of that education, conservation, community science trio that we work with.
Yeah. No, that's great. What else should folks know about the initiative that we might not have discussed?
Well, we are going to be offering a celebration of osprey as part of Migratory Bird Day, which is May 13th. It's going to be held right here at Oregon Coast Community College. This is a national celebration, but because osprey are migratory and because the theme of this year's Migratory Bird Day is water, it's perfect for us to focus on the osprey. We'll have a featured speaker. We will have osprey observing bird walks that accompany it, children's activities, and just keep tabs of our website, and you'll get more details. So that's the big event coming up.
Yeah.
We also, as I mentioned, are going to be developing an online map nest, but we will also have a hard copy of that map nest. So if you don't want to follow it on your phone or you're in the car and you want to do your own self-guided tour of osprey nests, it'll be right there and you can find them.
That's cool. Yeah. Have you found your volunteers?
Absolutely. We've already had our first training, and osprey have already been sighted in Newport and in Lincoln City, so we're all on the lookout, and it's actually quite charming. Everybody is chomping at the bit and a little bit competitive as to whose nest will be occupied first. We don't have a prize for that, but maybe there should be.
Do they test out nests and then leave them?
Sometimes they do. Yes, they do. As I mentioned with the East Devil's Lake Road nest, there was the disturbance with the firework. Sometimes they'll start a nest and something will happen that discourages the osprey and they will go to another nest to start over. Sometimes if a clutch fails for a reason, the babies die, they will build what's called a frustration nest, which is they abandon that nest, start another, and they won't lay any more eggs, but it may be they come to that second nest in subsequent years.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Any other exciting Audubon Society of Lincoln City events that we should know about?
Well, we have bird walks every month, and I am really eager for people to check out our website for both the calendar of events and also photographs of our past bird walks. I think that getting involved with osprey is a wonderful activity for families to do together.
Yeah.
Osprey are obviously huge birds. Yeah. They're easy to see. They're easy to identify. They're very loud, so you can often hear them before you see them. And it's a great way for kids to get involved in adopting your own nest and going back time after time through the course of the summer to see how the family is developing.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This has been fun.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking, Paul.
All right, now a word from Nyssa Parker. Nyssa is the Digital Communications Coordinator for the Audubon Society of Lincoln City. Hey, Nyssa.
Hey, Paul. Thanks so much. So I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about what's going on with our chapter this month. First off, we have some exciting news. For the last 3 years, our conservation action team has been working on proposals to establish marine conservation areas at Cape Lookout and Cape Foulweather. On April 20th this year, our proposals were unanimously approved by the Land Conservation and Development Commission, along with four other proposed sites along the Oregon coast. These sites will become focus areas for education and stewardship, and we've just received some additional funding to continue our work creating stewardship, education, and community science opportunities at these sites. Our goal here is to protect nearshore rocky habitats while still allowing access and appropriate use, and we are thrilled that our hard work has paid off.
Nice, nice, well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
On the topic of conservation, the Oregon Board of Forestry will be convening in Sisters on June 7th and offering a key opportunity for public testimony regarding the Habitat Conservation Plan. The timber industry is intent on derailing this plan that's been years in the making, so now is the time to speak up in support of fish and wildlife habitat, wild rivers, outdoor recreation, clean drinking water, and sustainable forestry practices. The most powerful way to show your support for the Habitat Conservation Plan is to testify in person or online on June 7th. Our Conservation Action Team will be testifying, and you can see the link in our show notes for more information on how you can too.
Great.
Now for our events coming up in June, our Birding Basics adult class is starting back up at Oregon Coast Community College on June 6th. This is a great opportunity for aspiring birders to learn how to find, watch, and identify birds in your area. This is a four-session, in-person class held over 2 weeks, and registration is still open, so see the link in our show notes if you're interested in signing up. We've got two bird walks coming up this month, one at the Knoll in Lincoln City on Friday, June 9th, and one at Ona Beach and Beaver Creek in Newport on Saturday, June 10th. Both walks are in the morning from 9 to 11 a.m. ASLC bird walks are always free, family-friendly, and open to the public, so we hope to see you there.
Cool.
Finally, our annual meeting and potluck is scheduled for June 22nd at the Lincoln City Cultural Center. This meeting will be an opportunity to vote on some new bylaws, hold elections for our board of directors, and celebrate all that we've accomplished this year. For more information on all of these events, you can visit our Facebook page or the calendar on our website, both of which we will link in the show notes.
Great.
Last but not least, I do want to mention that our chapter will be moving forward with a decision-making process regarding a name change for our chapter and dropping Audubon from our name. Long story short, National Audubon Society considered and rejected the proposal to drop the name of John James Audubon, a known owner of enslaved people who held white supremacist views. At the same time, large urban Audubon chapters such as Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco reached the opposite conclusion, determining that retaining the name was contrary to their efforts to be inclusive of all people. Our chapter has been meeting regularly with the 14 other Oregon chapters to discuss the name and how we are each going to respond. While voicing different concerns, for the most part, the Oregon chapters were dismayed by National Audubon's decision and hope that we can work together locally to choose new names that reflect our shared mission and values. And hopefully, we can offset the fragmentation caused by losing the nationally recognized name. Our own board of directors supports dropping Audubon from our name. At the same time, we are looking for a name that more closely reflects our service area, which is all of Lincoln and Tillamook counties, not just Lincoln City, as our current name reflects. We will continue working with the other Oregon chapters and keep you posted on what develops. That's all for our chapter's news this month. We hope you'll follow along as we continue our journey working together for birds and nature. For more information about Audubon Society of Lincoln City, visit our website at www.lincolncityaudubon.org.
Great. Thank you so much, Nyssa. And thanks to Oregon Coast Community College and Audubon Society of Lincoln City for your support. If you have questions about birding, episode suggestions, or to follow up on anything you heard today, shoot us an email at birdcast@lincolncityaudubon.org or head over to our Instagram page. Our handle is Oregon Coast Birdcast. And please follow, rate, and share this episode wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks. See you next time.